This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's a podcast that I've been very much looking forward to doing because, well, I don't know about you and whatever part of the world or whatever part of the country you're listening to Intelligent Medicine from, but here in the Northeast, we're enjoying a particularly mild winter with some record high temperatures that are very spring-like, and that's to the good because we can walk around in shirt sleeves. But also, to some extent, it's going to create problems for sufferers of mold allergies, because as long as the temperatures are ultra low, below the freezing point, we kind of keep mold proliferation down. But a lot of people suffer from a mold allergy. And today we're going to talk to an expert about safeguarding your home and workplace from mold allergy. But also with some additional comments about checking for potentially harmful chemicals. When I do a checkup on patients, I check the patient out, but sometimes the patient's environment deserves a checkout. And who are you going to call? Well, today's expert is Caroline Blazovsky. Carolyn is a national healthy home expert with over 16 years of experience working with the public and together with their physicians to create healthy living spaces and improve wellness. Because in terms of taking a truly holistic approach, we want to look at where you live and where you work. She is a certified mold remediator. Wow, that's a unique profession. She's also a certified indoor environmentalist, a healthy home specialist, and she has sustainable design certification from Boston Architectural College. I didn't know this. I'm looking at your bio. It says you're currently enrolled in a medical graduate program at the Keck School of Medicine at the University of Southern California. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So you are extending your knowledge of the effects of the environment into a study of human physiology and how it impacts human health. You're really rounding out your portfolio.
And, you know, I think the biggest thing, too, that we have to address is that we know, at least they're teaching us, that public health, 90% of what's going to make you or I healthy really has little to do with how much we engage in medical care. So our environment, our genetics, our behaviors, all of that really impacts how healthy we're going to be as individuals. So I feel like I'm really, by pushing and understanding that the environment is so key, having people examine their homes and look at their environment is so key to wellness. And I think we're going to find that it's even, as we move into the future, even bigger than we've anticipated.
And last but not least, you are president and founder of My Healthy Home, which is a service that I utilize sometimes when I have patients who are inexplicably sick in the face of, you know, I can give them the right diet, I can give them the right supplements. Maybe they continue to suffer from allergy symptoms or asthma, and we'll share some case studies with you in a few moments. But the culprit may not be the diet. It may be the home environment, and there are sort of hidden perils in the home environment that we will address. So, so give us a little background on this. Tell us a little bit about mold. You know, you're going back to the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the five books of the Old Testament, I think it's in Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. There's reference to mold and its pernicious effects on health. I was
Absolutely.
Amazed when I did a little biblical research on this
background. Molds are interesting, and I like to put it really in simple terms because so people just understand how they operate, and they're not any different than you or I, and they need food and air and water to proliferate and grow. And so in nature, when they're outside breaking down organic material and working to do their job, they're fantastic. But when they start growing on the inside of our homes, they become problematic. And the reason they are is because they do three things. So one is they produce that spore that you see. So you'll see that fuzzy mold growing on a piece of fruit or on your shower, somewhere it's not supposed to be in the home. That fuzzy piece of, or, you know, basically the spore itself contains a beta-glucan. And as you know, that beta-glucan has the potential to cause inflammation in the body. So first and foremost, and, it's sort of like a sugar, or it is a sugar, and it causes people to have allergies in a certain percentage of the population. The second thing is that molds also breathe in and out, and it's sort of like smoking cigarettes in your home. They breathe in and out, and they put off MVOCs. And we're familiar with that term, VOC, because we think of paint cans or we think of chemicals that are produced from different products that we use in the home. But molds also produce what we call an MVOC. Then thirdly, if you get what we call the toxic species of mold, or what are known as the water damage indicators, things that happen from increased water exposure or flooding inside of a home, those produce also mycotoxins. So molds have the ability to do three things that are not so great for us when they're inside our homes and they're affecting our immune systems.
Right. So, and those are three pathways to create havoc with the immune system. So starting with allergies, I mean, clearly mold allergies can be very, very deadly. But sometimes they're just a nuisance. They cause us to sneeze, wheeze, rub our eyes. That's serious, but that's the least of it. With the mycotoxins, this has actually opened up a whole new field within medicine. People get deadly sick. So can you kind of describe the gamut of illnesses that molds produce through these different mechanisms?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of mold you have, and then the species, and then the amount. So all these things sort of weigh into, you know, what we consider to be a problem. We can tell you, one, that houses that are, so if you have a kitchen or a bathroom that hasn't been remodeled in, say, 20 years, is usually my threshold, I can tell you pretty much for certainty that you're going to have species of mold growing behind your walls and growing behind your kitchen where you can't see it. So what's been helpful over the years, too, is we've developed different testing methods, and this comes back to the mycotoxin testing. So we have testing where we can test for the spore itself in an air trap. We also have the ability now to do what's called MVOC testing, and we're one of the few companies in the country that even does it. And what we do is take air samples and run those samples for the volatile organics that molds produce. So, for example, if you have mold within your walls that you can't see, or the spores aren't proliferating into the air where you can capture them, we can look at the gases they produce and see if there's a potential risk that you may have mold there. The third thing that you can do now, too, is also test for the mycotoxins that these put off that can really suppress the immune system, mm-hmm. cause all kinds of neurologic symptoms, respiratory symptoms, just complete breakdown of the immune system. That can be done through testing. That's something that a mold leaves behind. So after you've done a cleanup, maybe you had mold and then you still don't feel well, we can actually do testing to see if that mycotoxin is still there, which could be affecting you.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we are now familiar with the threat of what are called killer molds. Literally, they can debilitate and kill. And, in fact, I often hearken back to September 10th, 2001. That was probably a bit of a slow news day. There wasn't much happening in the world. So I believe it was the New York Post or the Daily News, one of the tabloids, ran a headline, "Killer Mold." Of course, the next day, they didn't need to do features on esoteric subjects like mold because the whole world exploded with 9/11, 2001. But it's of interest that this was a big deal until it was eclipsed by an even more important news story.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing I'd like to express is that a lot of people, too, when they come to us and they say, you know, I'm not feeling well, or I've decided I want to investigate my home, a lot does get blamed on mold that isn't just mold. So from 17 years of doing this, what we find is that when we see people who are chronically sick, and I'm talking really chronically sick, debilitated, and they can't function and do everyday tasks, it's usually what I call the trifecta. it's not usually that it's just mold in their home. When we start to analyze it, we notice their volatile organic compounds levels have exceeded a normal or acceptable level by 3, 4, 5 times. Or we see their formaldehyde levels are high. And what I want people to start realizing is that homes have a lot of different things that can go wrong. It's not just one. So if you don't get the answer just looking for a mold problem, you need to start investigating other avenues, because typically the bodies are pretty resilient, right? I mean, we can take a lot of insults and keep going. But in most of the time now, when we're seeing patients who aren't feeling well chronically, it really is a trifecta effect. So if they have high inflammation, they have high dandruff, they have high dust mites, they also have high volatile organics, high formaldehyde, and then they've got toxic mold.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see cases where people develop cancer, and I've gone in a lot of cases where we've investigated the homes of people after they've passed, and we found that they did have this trifecta. Now, can we prove that that was specifically related to the type of cancer that they had? No, but we know that this could have definitely been a risk.
And, you know, when you mentioned earlier, you threw out a term some people may not be familiar with, glucans. And glucans are, they can be helpful, because we actually use polysaccharide compounds from mushrooms, for example, which after all are part of the same family, the fungus family, to enhance the immune system, to make the immune system more responsive. But it can go haywire. And when you have too much exposure to these glucans, your whole immune system goes into a hyperreactive state, and you may develop multiple chemical sensitivity. You may develop allergies to food as a consequence of hyperactivation of your immune system because of mold exposure. It's a vicious cycle, but the initiator or the trigger may be excessive mold exposure.
Yeah. So, and what's interesting too, because last time you and I spoke, we didn't have the ability to test for VOCs now. So now we have. It's interesting to me that, you know, molds are producing these volatile organics just like paint fumes, and we do have the ability to test now, which we never did. Mm-hmm. So it opens up a whole different way to sort of find out if people do have the test, I mean, if they do have mold. And usually the tests are very synonymous, but every once in a while you do get cases where you can't see it, or the proteins or the spore itself aren't proliferating into the air, and then you capture the VOC instead. So it's quite fascinating where the industry has gone.
So what's the process like, and how do we scale it, make it cost effective? Because, you know, when I first heard about these services many years ago, I kind of thought of the movie Ghostbusters. You know, who are you going to call? You know, so you call in this team, and they come in hazmat suits, you know, with chemical sniffers and gadgets, and they rummage around the house. They tear down walls. They search out the source of contamination. Does it have to be that elaborate and expensive, or are there simple kits that people can use to get a handle on this?
Yeah, it's changed. So we've developed, you know, we obviously here don't do the remediation portion of it. We do all the testing and trying to find out if the house is healthy and sort of diagnosing the house. But, you know, you can order test kits through a physician. You can order it from us directly, whichever way you, you know, want to pursue it. And then we test, you know, depending on what the symptoms are and what the physician is thinking, we're able to either do a mold and allergen panel, or we do what's called our VOC and formaldehyde line, which is, you know, looking at the chemicals and the toxins you're exposed to. We also have a protein panel, which we just developed, which is really fascinating. And we are just analyzing all the different proteins you're exposed to and the level. So that would be cat, dog, rat, mouse, peanut, which is huge. I was part of a study, and I got privy to some information. It was a study done in Harvard. And what they did was they were analyzing for something else, but then they found that all of these homes that they did, it was about 1,500 homes, had peanut protein. And this is why this has become such a prevalent problem with the children having peanut allergies, is not so much just that they have allergies to peanut, but we're being overexposed to it. Most homes have peanut protein there.
You mean like as a residual from people making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? It just exudes into the air and floats around in such minute amounts that continuously exposes people?
Mm-hmm. And it's like cat and dog. If you see these things under microscopes, cat and dog protein looks like little sticky balls that have spikes, and they stick to things, and they're sort of like oily, and they're very challenging to remove. I mean, even when you go in and do a remediation, you do duct clean and you do all of this, it's very hard to get rid of pet proteins, and peanut is very similar. So once it gets into the environment, or, you know, you touch something and you touch a countertop and you think you wipe it away, we're finding that that's not the case. So now we have the ability to test for it, And what's fascinating, I had a client out in California. He was in Los Angeles, an older gentleman, and he said, I'm getting sick. And he said, I've always been healthy. I don't know what my problem is. He's like, I want to test my home. And it was by default that I said, well, let's do the protein test. I said, well, he has a lot of traffic, a lot of occupants coming in and out of the house. And I said, let's look. His dander counts were elevated on his regular allergen panel. I said, let's go a little deeper and just do the protein test. These tests are not expensive. You're talking about like $150 to do protein testing.
Yeah.
So it's not that people can't afford to do them. They're really reasonable. I said, let's do a protein test and see where we're at. Well, the laboratory called me and said, look, we've never seen this much horse protein in a home ever. Like, is this guy living with horses? Like, has he taken up residence? Like, this is crazy.
Is he living in a stable? I mean, do we make up samples or something? This is from inside, not from this outdoor horse farm?
And so they couldn't believe it. And I said, no, let me, get back to you. I'm going to have to talk to him. And what was happening was he was hiring masseuses to come in. And this particular masseuse was basically spending a lot of time with her horses. And the amount got so elevated in the house and the bedroom and the area that it actually was making him sick. And it was very high concentration. He did not have horses. He did not have exposure to horses. It was all coming in from her clothing. And so eventually, unfortunately, he let her go. But we did a cleanup, and he was fine. So these things, we pick them up, and we travel around, and we go to common places where everybody is, and you don't realize you transmit them, but if you're allergic to it, it can be a real problem, and you don't know it.
So the last time I used your service was a few years ago, and I have a house by the water, which is subject to a lot of humidity. There's been flooding, a couple of storms, Sandy, and people who visit my place generally do okay, but there's one room which I suspected, because people who sleep in the upstairs bedroom over my garage tend to come down rubbing their eyes and asking for an antihistamine, and I was wondering if there was a concentration of mold in that particular area. So you sent me the test kit, and I wonder if it's the same test kit. It was a series of little boxes that were attached to batteries. They were battery powered. They had like little propellers.
The air sampler.
There's an air sampler, right.
Correct.
And so it's kind of ingenious, because I know that when I first got into testing homes, we just, used a mold plate. We used a little, Petri dish, and basically let the Petri dish.
Yes, the Petri dish was the first. Yeah, exactly.
Let it sit out.
And then we've gone to the sampler. We still have that. That's your typical air sampler, where you take, 5 liters, 10 liters, 15 liters of air per minute. And then you basically pull samples, and then you look for spore count. And that's one way to test for mold. And we still do that. That's our mold and allergen panel. But then when we start to get more in depth, if that's not really producing something, we'll look at the volatiles. So with you, because something triggered in what you said this room is over the garage. Well, people may be more susceptible there, one, because the garage may or may not house volatile organics. You could have paint, you have cars, you have snow blowers, weed whackers, gasoline, whatever. You may or may not store that there. But that could be increasing the problem, where, you think it's just mold, and there may be mold there, but it may also be a volatile issue. So in that case, I'd probably look at VOCs, and I'd pull the MVOC at the same time. So I was looking at mold and then also other volatiles to see what, what's actually going on in that space.
I think I need to do a new round of testing. Anyway, what we did find specifically in that area a high mold count. So we did a little tearing out of some of the drywall there, found mold behind the, which is usually where it's not apparent on the outside, but sometimes behind the drywall, there's going to be some mold accumulation, because there had been improper sealing and the humidity exposure, maybe some effects of aftermath of flooding, and things are better. But
yes,
I still want to check it out. I want to check it out, because I suspect that we didn't nail it all the first go-round.
And it may, like I said, it may also be, it could have been toxic mold. You could have mycotoxins behind. Or, like I said, these VOCs, we're starting to learn more and more about volatile organic compounds. And when we talk about them, these are the things that all of our personal care products put off. So, if you're using paints, if you're using gasoline, air fresheners, personal care products, hair, shampoo, all these things that you bring into your home, basically we contribute to this VOC level. And we know now, by looking at like European standards and then also the Green Building Standard, we like to see houses under 500 total volatiles. most houses in the United States usually are coming in somewhere around 1500. And then you have people who are obviously out of range that are 4000, 5000, new construction, renovation, people who really are just storing too many things or have jobs where they're painting in their home. Or so when we drop these numbers, what we notice with the VOCs is that symptoms improve because the body's got to clear a lot less regardless. I don't care what you're, you know, you have asthma, you have allergies, headaches, autoimmune problems, any kind of chronic disease. When these numbers go down, people's symptoms improve. And the reason that is because the body doesn't have to clean and get rid of all these things that you're breathing in on a continuous basis. It helps the body. So that's why we're really trying to encourage people to keep their volatiles 500 and under. We don't expect you to live in a bubble. That's not what I'm saying. But you don't want to be way out of kilter where you're, you know, one, exposed to carcinogens, but two, your air quality is compromised.
Wow. Okay, great. You've laid the groundwork for our discussion in part two, because in part two, I want to do a deeper dive on what some of the exposures might be in different rooms, what situations call for an evaluation, and above all, what tips you can give to homeowners to minimize their exposure. Yes, they should test, but there's some basic tips that you can follow in terms of keeping your home air healthy. You know, we tend to worry about going outside in the street, being exposed to smog. But the sad fact is that our homes are enclosed and we have tight building syndrome. We don't want to lose heat. And then we air condition in summer and we have hermetically sealed environments that keep the toxins in. We think they protect us from the outdoor toxins, but unfortunately, we may be exposed to worse hazards inside our homes. And when we venture outside into the pollen and the particulate matter in the air and the smog. So in part two with today's guest, Caroline, is it Carolyn or Caroline?
Some Caroline. People like
Caroline Blazowski, we'll do a deeper dive on the way that we can check out our home environments. The website is healthyhomeexpert.com. More in part two with today's guest. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.